Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Boy, we are going to have a fascinating topic, I think, today. The reason being is we're going to be talking about ghosts. Well, I know maybe some of you have had some experiences. I have, and I've had them on different levels. And my guest today is Karen Good, and we are going to be talking about kids, specifically kids who see ghosts. Now, Karen is a repeat guest on the show, but she's written about other materials, and this one is especially significant because so often we don't believe kids when they tell us that they are seeing things or they have these various experiences. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna. Great to be with you again.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, you have been very much involved as a speaker and a psychotherapist and a spiritual coach in working with people. How did you find yourself evolving into the research and study regarding the paranormal?
Well, obviously, like you, I had personal experiences as a child, shut them down, and of course, in my 30s, they opened up again. But what got this particular book rolling was I happened to make a blog comment about the A&E Psychic Children Who See Ghost Show,
mm-hmm.
and I was absolutely inundated with comments, ghost stories, and many, many questions, Donna, about how do I handle my child who woke up at night, and my child won't sleep in his room. And what's the difference between seeing ghosts and night terrors?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the questions just kept coming, and this evolved over the last year. And, you know, because the whole year had so been devoted to ghosts,
mm-hmm.
The book happened. It's like,
wow.
We have to answer this.
Well, I was very, very honored to have you call me and ask if we could do an interview so that you could include material in your book, which is here. And I really felt very pleased that you asked me because this has been such a significant part of my life. And I've known children and having had experiences of my own, and I just felt like it was really good to talk about this because so frequently people, when their children will say, oh, I saw Uncle Harry last night, and he was wearing purple pajamas and had gold teeth. And parents go, oh, brother, what have we got here? We've got an overactive imagination. On the other hand, you will have children that, like someone ask you about the night terrors or what's going on here. And the parents really are frightened themselves, and sometimes the psychic trait doesn't run in the family. Many times there are those kids that'll just have it, and it's a natural phenomena, I think. But you've really got some good material in here, and I think that a lot of the stuff that's put on television regarding psychic phenomena has so much woo-woo attached to it. It really is very discouraging to me. I was listening to something about seances today in the afternoon when I was having lunch, and I thought, oh, good grief. What is this stuff? A lot of it, they try to sensationalize it. And it, to me, that's rather sad. But you had all these people. And like you said, the book just sort of came together on its own. And I just love the approach of not being fearful about it. As you were going through and collecting your information, what kind of an effect did this have on you?
Well, I just started having my heart open, Donna, and I guess empathy was just pouring out because some of these children that I talked to, you know, one little boy hadn't slept in his room for months, and he was getting physically sick, and
mm-hmm.
the mom just didn't know what to do for him and thought that a lot of it was, you know, oversensitivity to the divorce. And that seems to be where I really feel for the child. You know, I feel, put your child on the phone. Let me talk to him. It's like, can you get rid of that ghost in your room? No, I can't. I'm sick. I need help. And so that I need help, that I need help, keeps coming through in the kids, you know, that I talk to. So what happened to me is I started actually remembering a couple of events that I had in my own childhood. Of course, I was raised an Irish Catholic, so wouldn't it be very natural that I would see Catholic saints?
Absolutely.
So that's what was happening to me. My heart kept opening, and I kept spending hours and hours answering questions and talking to them on the phone. And, you know, it was fine to have the parents who were just thrilled that their kids saw a ghost and knew how to handle it and laughed about it and talked about it, much like your wonderful stories. You know, you had support. But what about the kid who saw his family die in a dream and was afraid the dream would come true? So I really got an immersion into the deep end of the pool of kids being scared. It was very different from doing therapy with one family or talking to one person on the phone. But to get inundated and really get in deeply to the visceral fear that these children are living with, all I could think of is, what if they grow up and they're absolutely so frightened of their environment that they just can't act on their environment? You know, they fall into that helplessness sometimes that I've seen a lot of UFO abductees fall into. You know, I can't do anything. I'm helpless. Help me. So
well,
it was a real conversion.
I think that is often the attitude of their parents, too. And so when they're that sensitive, when they're that in the groove, you might say, or in the flow, then they are picking up on all the people around them. And just like any child, they say, I really don't want to be a misfit. So if you think this is bad, then this is bad. This is going to be horrible. And they will take on the fears and apprehensions of the people around them. I learned this many, many, many years ago from a spiritualist minister that had gone through World War II, and I happened to be, he was a very mature gentleman when I had the opportunity to meet him, and I was in my 20s, and he said, when I would ask, because I was a single mom, I had a little girl, and I said, is it okay for me to bring her to class? He said, sure. And he would tell the parents, he said, bring your children in. He said, we'll provide them with pillows and blankets, and they can just curl up. You don't want people to be, you don't want your children to be afraid. And he was a trans medium, and he, you know, he'd talk about all kinds of things. Do you know none of those kids awakened at any time terrified of anything? They would just sleep soundly, they felt safe, and they'd hear all of this conversation, and they all were well-balanced because nothing was made ugly or violent or bad. And if there were any questions, he would always answer them honestly and directly. And I just thought, whoa, that is pretty significant.
Absolutely. And I think the first and foremost question that we get is, what can I do? What's the first thing I should do? What's the second thing I should do? And it sounds so common and simple to say, please just listen. And please just soothe your child's fears first, you know, before you jump in with words and comments. And it was just an overall unanimous vote by the individuals in the book who are parents or mediums, individuals like you with these years of experience who know to listen. And when a parent says, oh, you know, I can't ask them questions or I shouldn't jump in and have them color something first. It's like, just soothe them first, you know? Rub their back. Give them a hug. And so, as simple as it sounds, that's exactly what this book tries to do, is let's start with reconnecting to something real and grounded. Because that safety factor, that's it.
Absolutely. And that's even with the adults. And it's getting past,
for sure.
By the time we grow into adulthood, we've developed all kinds of little myopic paradigms. And it takes a while before we start going into what I consider a reverse mode. This is, wait a minute, I need to think about what my own experiences are so that we can be without fear. You have a great story in here about the monk who stole your hot shower.
That was hilarious.
You've got to share that. I love that. You've got, and this takes place in Peru, right?
Yes. I went with a group of people down to Peru. We were working with Don Eduardo Calderon. You know, the psychologist mind, I'm going to go down and learn healing techniques. I'm just going to observe. So here we are. We're into our trip, and we're up at high altitudes in Cusco getting ready to go up to Machu Picchu. But we're staying in this 300-year-old, 400-year-old inn. It's huge. It's lovely. It's three stories high with verandas. And everybody's got hot water, and we're so tired. So my friend and I are in the room, and our water's cold, and it won't heat up. Meantime, right next door, my neighbors are taking steaming showers. So I go down, you know, to the desk. I visit other people's rooms. I find out what's going on. Finally, I just sat down with my friend Rosa and said, there's something weird here. You know, my intuition just won't kick out. Let's see what's going on. And this little monk appeared. He was shorter than we were. And, you know, he really looked like a ghostly monk. And he was frightened to go on. He was scared of going to hell. He sent us images of having been forced to kill native Indians of the country. And that was how he got our attention. He stole our cold water. And so we actually opened up a door of light in the room, and we asked him to go through. And he wouldn't go until somebody from the other side met him. And that actually provided a warming up of the room after it was so cold. So we had a very interesting time. But the cold water was actually returned to us, and we did get, I mean, the hot water, and we actually did get good hot showers. But it was truly one of the weirder experiences that I've had. And the fact that I had a witness, you know, who experienced the feeling of the chills,
mm-hmm.
and she was from Colombia, so he actually was speaking Spanish to her, but I was getting the images that she was getting, and we were writing notes back and forth, you know, rather than discussing anything out loud, about our common images. So it was one of the few times in my life that I've had an experience that was quite distinct and yet shared with someone else. So, you know, if you had any doubt about a ghost, something like that gives veracity or validity in my mind to the fact that when they want attention and when they need help, they can devise ways to get it.
You have a lady, Kathleen Dunham, who talked about her ghostly playmate, and then you also had a story not only about that playmate, which was fascinating, and it wasn't fearful to Kathleen at all, mm-hmm. and it's so vivid in her mind. I mean, this was a personality that kept her company when she was a child.
Exactly.
And then once it moved from the house, it sort of was in the house they had moved into. Once she moved from that house, Peter didn't go with her. That was the ghost. But you talked also, there's a wonderful story about spirit people. And Susan Gale, she was the co-author of Soulful Parenting.
Mm-hmm.
She shared this story about spirit people. Let's chat about that for a bit.
You know, that was a wonderful story about a Native American father whose son was brought up by his grandmother in his early childhood years. And as the interview continued, we find out that the grandmothers of the little boy are called spirit walkers because they're not walking in their physical body anymore. They're deceased. And the little boy has the ability to hear them and be guided by them and learned how to work with healing the human heart at his young age. So he goes to kindergarten, and the father was just great. He went in, he told the kindergarten teacher precisely what their beliefs were, that this boy is going to mention his grandmothers, but they're not in a living body, they're walking in spirit. And if she had any questions, if anything happened, to just call him, you know, he'd be there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day she does call him, and she says, you have to get here, hurry. And so he rushes to the school, and he thinks something's wrong, and he, you know, signs in and rushes down the hallway. And there's this teacher who's just glowing with a smile as big as the room. And she says that she came in depressed, her car, something I think had happened to her car, and she was upset. And the little boy came up and said, you're not smiling today. And whatever he did in hugging her and in touching her heart, he asked permission to do so, and she said sure. And she just felt completely different and wanted to know what he did and if the father or the little boy would teach her how to maintain that emotional heart strength. So not only do we have these invisible grandmothers working with their grandson, but now he's a healer at age 5 and can make a difference in the entire classroom. Absolutely wonderful story.
It is a wonderful story. But I think the most significant aspect of it is the fact that his father was wise enough to be respectful and to honor the experiences that this child of his is experiencing. And to have the courage to say something to a teacher, I mean, you go back, if you went back to the early 1900s, they probably would have just absolutely pummeled the kid with different attitudes, unless he had a teacher that was gracious. It's just amazing to me how so many times we forget how important the cultural aspect of our lives are. And I've known of families where there have been interracial marriages mm-hmm. and intercultural marriages, and that the children born to those couples have inherited certain patterns of cultural dimension, and they express themselves in that way, and the parents sometimes are just lost. They don't know what to do with it. They absolutely are saying, no, you're not supposed to do this. You know, you got to do this, and this. And the children are recognizing their heritage and expressing it in the way that their heritage would be. That's why I think it's so important. If you've got a mixed cultural background or, you know, genetic background, explore it. Find out about it, because many times you're carrying along something very special that is complemented by the understanding of that background. I think that father is to be commended. That is just
absolutely.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree with you completely.
Now, Doreen Fisher, I had to chuckle because there was a great deal there, but you have a story about how old patterns creep in once we have children. It's like the myths, the misunderstandings, the ignorance that sometimes is perpetuated by whatever. It can be societal, it can be family, it can be religions, it can be all kinds of things that have false myths about them that create fear. And there's this wonderful story about children being sometimes our greatest teachers. And it was about a little one named Mila, I believe it is. M-I-L-A, or is it Mila?
Mila, yes. Her little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mila was her firstborn, and Doreen is a very slender, wan kind of woman, vibrant, very energetic, mm-hmm. but sensitive in body chemistry. So she was told she could never have children, and she had made up her mind that she wanted to, and of course, as soon as she made up her mind, she was pregnant, and along comes her daughter, who began seeing things right away, and that was her firstborn. And so she just kind of went along with it, loved her imagination, loved her creativity. And the little girl kept seeing ghosts in the top bunk bed. And the ghost at night, she said, would push her over to the edge of her bed. And Doreen would come in to check on her, and she'd be pushed up against the wall again. And she'd wake her up, you know, and straighten her out so she'd be comfortable. And this went on all night, for several nights. And finally, you know, Mila said, Mommy, you know, the ghost crowded me out. And her little brother, Stone, the one who has a cadre of zoo of animals as his companion, said, well, I'll sleep up there. My tiger will take care of me. And he'll keep the ghosts away. And so they switched beds. But the child has also seen things in the room and is very much aware of presences in the homes that they used to live in. And they moved around a little bit and were in several haunted houses. And it was always the daughter that saw it first, heard it first, brought it to the mother's attention. And, you know, then later on, of course, the mother, in investigating it, would find a lot of it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just imaginary friends. It was quite literally a doorway to the other side, and they would crowd her out of bed at night until she learned how to put up boundaries and deal with it. And a mother who just gave up being fearful and learned that she not only had to trust her daughter, but had to trust her own intuition about her daughter,
mm-hmm.
because she's raised both her children very differently. They're both very different children than the norm. Stone was a child who was born with a heart defect, and he had a near-death experience when, my gosh, in the early first months of his birth. And, you know, whatever happens to the temporal lobes or whatever happened to his biochemistry, from the time he could talk, he has animated animal friends, just like
mm-hmm.
any child would have power totems. And the child's 4 or 5 now, and these animal friends have been there since the beginning. And they are his friends, and he collects pets. He says, Mommy, you know, there's an orange kitten at the door, and we need to bring it in. And, you know, there is. There's a stray kitten at the door, and that becomes a pet, and then a turtle. So he's slowly collecting his live animals as well as his power totems is what I call them. But it's his animals who tell a lot of things about, if we're going on vacation, Mommy, you know, don't leave the keys under the front doormat. You know, give them to a neighbor because somebody will break in. And he's
mm-hmm.
always been very accurate. He's just a walking radar of intuition. But his animals are his boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing for a child to learn, because they then have such an empathy with the natural world around them, and they don't ever feel like they're alone.
No, they don't. And it's wonderful for Doreen because, you know, once her first child had these intuitions about presences in the home, she really wanted to discount Stone's menagerie and
mm-hmm.
would off, you know, she didn't put him down, but she would question him in detail, and they'd be in the middle of a movie and he'd start giggling because the pet next to him was tickling his arm. And so it was all very real, and she just learned to, you know, these are my children, this is who I'm going to be for the next 20 years, so
mm-hmm.
let's get a good attitude and go for it.
I agree. Now, you have a chapter on how intuitive children become intuitive psychic adults. And that, to me, is, you know, a very normal, natural transition if they are enabled when they're young to be at ease with this. And I think a key with children is that you don't exaggerate things out of proportion. You just be a good listener. When they're telling you their experiences, listen. I think that is, we mentioned it right at the beginning. It's so important to just listen. And lots of times the kids will talk about their experiences, and you'll say, well, how do you feel about it? Oh, I don't know. I think I want to go outside and play with John. And that's
exactly.
Totally, you know, it's just, boom, it's gone.
They
but
don't
go,
want
wow.
to indulge it either, do they?
No, they don't. Most children don't have the time because they're just living it. They're just absolutely living it. Now, you have Hilary Rimel in your book, and she is, an intuitive herself. Her grandfather was a metaphysician, but her parents, interestingly enough, just didn't want to talk about any of this, and she came by her skills and talents quite naturally. Share a little bit about her 5-year-old experience.
Well, it was an interesting thing because Hilary loved her grandfather, and her grandfather was a hypnotherapist trained and also, yes, definitely a metaphysician. So one day he wanted to take her back, and she always felt that it was purposeful, that he was preparing her for her future. So he took her back to a past life incarnation where she saw her another set of parents, not her current parents in her life with Hillary. And she, he opened the door to her heart to connect with them and speak with them a little bit, but then he had to bring her back out of the hypnotherapy. But the doorway was always open, so she did see angels, and for years she drew pyramids and she tried to draw their faces, and she would see their faces everywhere. But when her parents found out about it, they were absolutely furious. They refused to let him do that again. They wanted to be present if they even, you know, visited. They were just afraid that, the grandfather was going to influence her to not be normal, so to speak. And, you know, Hillary did try and shove it down for a long time. She became a very successful real estate person, but her waking up kept pushing to the surface and pushing to the surface. So as an adult and a mother, you know, with an intuitive son who also sees ghosts, she's embraced that life now as an intuitive and, you know, again, trying to help others and raise her son and things. But that one experience with her father was the, it was the transformative and pivotal point of her life.
You have a number of different chapters dealing with different levels of information regarding working with children. You have a question sheet that parents can use to recognize that their children are extremely psychic. You also have a good section on children and their dreams. Now, in many cultures throughout the world, especially in the Native American cultures, discussing dreams is very significant, and I was trying to think, I think it's the Inuit culture in Canada. There was some interview that I saw once where the women would talk about their dreams. They'd sit in a circle every morning. We'd call it a coffee clutch, but it wasn't for them, but that's what I'd call it. And it was their time to chat, and there were elders in this circle, and the women would talk about their dreams, and then the elder would interpret their dreams for them. And it was so meaningful because one of the women was having a very difficult time with a son who was involved in narcotics. Now, we're talking about adults here for a minute. Let's go back to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
When children have vivid dreams, and I was one of those children that had exceptionally vivid dreams, but that was never encouraged to talk about dreams with me. That just wasn't done, and I didn't think much about it. However, I can remember a vivid dream where I actually saw my father going through an attack and dying. It was to take place many, many years later. I must have been about 6 or 7 years old when it happened. And my dream showed a black panther going at his chest and just opening up his chest. Well, he ended up dying from lung cancer in his early 60s. Now, that was a long, long time. That was what you'd call a precognitive dream. And I can remember awakening from that, and I don't think I ever shared that with anybody. But he was in his 60s when lung cancer got him, and it was a very, very difficult time for him. But this is something I saw when I was a little girl, so I knew that my father was going to die before me. But I was so small when I had the dream, I didn't understand why. But these were experiences that I had. So you have a wonderful section on dreaming and how we need to listen to the dreams that our children have.
Yeah, very definitely. And I love the idea of sitting around the morning table, you know, at breakfast and talking about them, because you dreamed about your father, and I don't know if your dream was scary for you, but most of the people I interviewed had dreams that came true like that, that were frightening, you know, dreaming of a car accident, dreaming of a murder in a house, and then visiting the house, you know, a day or two later because it was for sale or something. And, you know, those children felt so intensely frightened and felt guilty when the event actually took place. They thought by having the dream, they caused it. So I'm just imagining the hours of guiltlessness that we could create if we would sit and talk with our children. And particularly, I'm going to say, between the ages of 8 and 13, when the hormones are changing and the dreams are just lively, there's a couple of couple of young girls, 12 and 13, that I talk with periodically. The 12-year-old has dreams every night that are very vivid, and, you know, they tell her they're all about right and wrong, good and bad, left and right. And so she's working through those issues for herself. But another young woman sees shadows in her dream, and we determined that it was probably her uncle who had died. So there's lots of ways. Another little girl has dolphin dreams. They come to her, and they want her to swim with them. Mm-hmm. And she's literally, you know, planning a trip to go swim with dolphins, and her parents are very supportive. But to me, those dreams are the images that can guide the children's lives, but also help them accept emotionally what they're getting and learn how to deal with it early.
I agree.
Yeah.
Karen, we are out of time. It just went by like the wind. Your book, Kids Who See Ghosts, How to Guide Them Through Fear, I think it's a great book for adults to read for their own insightfulness, because so many times as adults we deny our own skills and capabilities. What's your website, Karen, that people can go to?
The website is exactly the name of the book. It's kidswhoseeghosts.com.
Great. All right. Well, it's been a delight having you as a guest today. Kids Who See Ghosts, go to the website, kidswhoseeghosts.com. Karen Good has been my guest, and it's been a delight, Karen. Continued success with your research and your involvement in helping people come to understand what we often call as paranormal really isn't very abnormal at all. It really is a normal fact of life that we just need to get comfortable with.
Very true.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Donna Sebo.
Check out kidswhoseeghosts.com. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 is the toll-free worldwide number. If you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And don't forget, if you have a story about a ghost, some unique experience you've had, near-death experience, whatever, I'd love to hear from you. The reason being, I'm putting together a book of 100 stories, and I would love to hear yours. So send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and be sure to put the, say, story for Donna, for Donna's book in the subject line, so that way I can identify it quickly. And because I get so many emails, sometimes I just feel like I'm swimming in them. So if you'll just do that, that enables me to identify it quickly, and I'll put it in our file, and we may have your story in the book that's going to be coming out. So I just wanted to let you know about that. So again, send me your particular story and experience, sooner rather than later, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. By the way, I am going to be doing some radio shows this month, and so far, the next two that I have scheduled are on a Sunday, June the 20th. I'm going to be on Bipolar Radio with Susan and Bert at 11 in the morning. And this is out of California. You can go into Bipolar Nation Radio on Facebook or can go to www.latalkradio.com. And it will be open for callers, 323-203-0815. And then on June 27th, on Sunday afternoon, 3:30 Pacific, 5:30 Nashville, Tennessee time. That's right, we're going to be talking live in Nashville with Denise Barnes. Her show is called Differences, so we'll be on there. And if you want to listen into the show, it's at www.wvol1470.com. So we'll have a chance to do that. And any other information that is coming up, I'll be sure to send it out. Also, I'm going to be sending a news blip out via email. If you're on my email list, you will see it, regarding Karen Good's book, because she has very generously included me in her book. There's a nice section of interview and commentary that I gave her, and she's put it in there. So you'll have a chance to look at that and to review it. And if you're on my email list, that's great. If not, just send me an email, and I'll be glad to add you to the free newsletter that's put out every month. And tomorrow, we are going to be talking with a very well-known lady, very talented lady, Barbara Max Hubbard. Boy, is she an inspiration. This lady is in her 80s, and she's producing films. Can you imagine? I mean, 20, 30 years ago, that would have been considered really, really unusual. Well, she's dynamic. She's a good example for all of us. And when you get older, it doesn't mean that you go for the rocking chair. That's not it. She's come out with a movie called Visions of a Universal Humanity. It is beautifully done, and we're going to be talking about this movie that Barbara has put together tomorrow. So I do hope you'll join me, and we'll tell your friends. So that's our lineup. Next week, we're going to be talking about the menopause thyroid solution with Mary Shulman. Now, this is very important because a lot of women have problems when they're in menopause because their thyroid changes, and they're not even aware of it. And a lot of doctors are not aware of it. So this is really good health information. Then we're going to be talking about more coaching for fatherhood with Lou Epstein. This is a man that says the males in the world need to be educated about how to be good fathers. Then we're going to be talking about the Happy Body, Jerzy Gregorek. This is an awesome man. He and his wife are phenomenal athletes, and their publication is really all about how you do not have to age. If you're in your 20s and in your 30s, you want to be sure that you start taking care of your body now. And if you haven't done it, maybe you're in your 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s, the time to start is today. And I think you'll find the material very good. Then we're going to be talking with William Powers. His book is titled 12 by 12. This man lived in a house that was 12 feet by 12 feet. And his experience is just amazing, delightful. And then Soul Sight, Mary Barton, a psychic, and we're going to be learning from her some tips and suggestions about developing your own intuition. So we've got a great lineup next week. I hope you will join us. Call-in number today, if you'd like to chat with me, is 888-815-9756. Nature has a way of telling truth in manners that many times are not perceived by the average individual. Right here in the Northwest Turf of Tacoma, Washington, investigators were able to identify two generations of maggots on a body. This individual had been killed by a gunshot wound, and when they determined the approximate date of the corpse's demise, the maggot's life cycle lasts only 3 weeks, so the fact that there were two types there They were able to get the estimated time of death, and then they were able to trace the deceased whereabouts and eventually find the real killer of this individual. Fascinating stuff, forensics. Awesome, awesome subject matter. I think one of my favorite programs regarding this is NCIS. I really enjoy it because of the portrayal, and Abby is the gal. She is so extreme in the way she dresses. I just loved her from the very first time I saw the portrayal in the show. But it really is an industry that not too many people go into, forensic investigation. And there's really a skill to it because you do learn how to read Mother Nature's signals and signs. And lots of times there are things there that you would never expect that give away the facts that are needed to solve a case. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Oh, I haven't forgotten about that chicken recipe, so I've still got that here, and I'll be glad to share it with you when we come back from our break in a few minutes. But what I wanted to do was share some information about a diamond. And I know you've probably heard about the Hope Diamond. And, of course, if ever you have a chance to go to the Smithsonian, you will see it on display there. It is utterly, utterly magnificent. But there's quite a bit of history about the Hope Diamond. And, of course, it has a legend that has followed it that's a real fascinating one, and that's the one I'm going to share with you today. In 1967, on December 14th, Evelyn McLean had the Hope Diamond bequeathed to her. She didn't ask for it, but it was given to her. Now, as legend has it, the diamond is cursed. Shortly after she received the diamond, she died. They don't know why. So they figured that the curse was being passed on to her. It's amazing how these legends continue. Now, her grandmother apparently had purchased the gem in 1911, and her grandmother's life after she purchased the Hope Diamond was just nothing but tragedy. An automobile accident killed her young son. Her daughter committed suicide. Her husband was unfaithful and mentally unstable. And she died herself in 1947 and willed the diamond to her grandchildren. However, all of her jewels, including the Hope Diamond, were sold because her debts were just absolutely awesome. Now, the Hope Diamond was rumored to have begun as a 112-carat gem that was pried from the third eye of an Indian deity and was brought to France in the mid-1600s by a merchant traveler, Jean-Baptiste Travnier. Now, over the years, it possessed and was possessed, don't you just love the combination of words, by the French royal family. Now, this family dealt with intrigue, embezzlement, executions, and Cadet Goulat, a thief who stole the diamond during the French Revolution, smuggled it to England, ended up being imprisoned, and then that 112-carat diamond disappeared. Until the diamond surfaced after the statute of limitations on its theft expired. So someone was very deliberate about keeping it hidden until that time. Now, in 1812, there was a diamond merchant, Daniel Eliasson, who got it, sold it to Philip Hope. He was a Dutch heir to a banking fortune. When Hope acquired this diamond, it created bitterness and utter, they called it bedlam in the Hope family for two generations before it was sold to pay off debt to Simon Frankel, who was a New York jeweler. Now, they say there's been many owners of the Hope Diamond. That includes King George IV of Britain, Simon Montardes, who died with his family when his horse spooked and overturned their carriage. There was a Turkish sultan who stabbed his wife and was overthrown. Two unnamed murdered owners, Jacques Sillot, a French broker who went insane and killed himself. A Russian prince, Ivan Karatovsky, who gave the diamond to his mistress, an actress who was shot on stage while wearing it. And he was later murdered. Finally, in 1911, Pierre Cartier, we all know his name, The famous jeweler, he sold it to Evelyn Walsh McLean, who let her dog wear the diamond when she wasn't. The diamond's final owner, Harry Winston, didn't believe in the curse. He mailed it. Get this. He mailed it in a brown paper bag as a donation to the Smithsonian Institution in 1958, and that has been its home ever since. Isn't it amazing? But the Smithsonian hasn't gone through bad times. Maybe it's because it's all enclosed and it's got a huge security system on it. Who knows? But it was so unique and so special that it created havoc wherever it went. Fascinating story. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and I have that recipe for you. Mm-hmm. And I'll share that as well. Donna Sebo, 888-815-9756, if you'd like to chat with me. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. All right, get that pad of paper and pen out. This is a recipe for chicken. It's what I call a crunchy chicken. But if you're like me and you like unusual seasonings, you can use an ingredient that's not that expensive, and you can buy just what you need for the recipe, and you crunch it up. What is that going to be? That is going to be potato chips. This is called potato chip buffalo chicken. That's right. And I've got some suggestions relative to this that you could do if you were trying to cut the calories a little bit. Because, let's face it, this recipe is going to have mucho calories to it, but you can make adjustments depending on what you do. But let's do it as it really is. 4 cups of red-hot flavored potato chips. Now, that's about a 3 3/4 ounce package of chips. So that's what you're going to need. You don't have to buy the great big bag, just what you need for the recipe. So about 3 3/4 ounce package. And then you're going to need 1/2 cup of seasoned dry breadcrumbs. And I know we've got a caller. Let me get the seasoned ingredients out, and then I'll give the balance of the recipe afterwards. You're going to need 1 chicken, about 3.5 pounds, cut into 8 pieces, 1 teaspoon of celery salt, 1/2 cup of creamy blue cheese salad dressing, 1 tablespoon of chopped parsley, and, of course, some other little items that you could have as a compliments to go with it. Okay, you've got the ingredients. I'll give you the recipe as to what you need to do to fix these yummy, crunchy chicken pieces. But let's go to our caller first. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. How are you doing? This is Jules from yesterday. You asked me to call back.
Oh, yes, Jules. You had a question for me. And where are you calling in from again?
California.
From California.
Northern
where in California? Excuse me?
The Eureka area.
Oh, okay. All right, Jules. Yeah. What was your question? Because I believe you had one for me and I couldn't answer it. Because
yeah,
we ran
it
out
was
of time.
About, I'm going for an audition. For the OWN network, you know, it's something that I got to turn down the radio. Sorry. it's something that Oprah's putting on.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last 3 years, I've been spreading love and recognition and gratitude to people. And I'm just wondering if that audition's going to go well.
You're going to need to determine how you want to present this so that it is going to be a very compact package. Because
okay.
You're not going to have a whole bunch of time to do this. How
right.
much time are they giving you?
You know, I don't know. It's an open cast call. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Make it tight. Really think it through. How are you
okay.
going to do it? And then what I want you to do is practice in front of a mirror. And in your mind, pretend like you're someone that would be viewing this. How do you want to express yourself so that you're going to get the point across with meaning?
Okay.
In a very effective and efficient way. I know that sounds rather cold, but it would be very easy to be very verbose. So it's as if you've got to make sure it's tight, it's compact, and it's delivered with a sense of presence that they feel.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. But what was that word? That was a big word for me. What was
I don't remember.
The one word? Verbose.
Yes, verbose. For someone that is verbose, it means they're talking too much.
Okay.
They go on and on and on. Have you ever been around somebody when you're sitting there thinking, good Lord, will they ever get to the point?
Yeah, I think about that about me all the time. I'm just kidding. But
all right.
I get it.
All right, so what you want to do is make it tight. You don't want to go through and explain away everything because what you're going to get is a dull look in the eyes. You need to present it so that it's a compact package and they get it. And if you have to do a demonstration, that has to be included in that package. It's efficient. So if you can present it in 5 minutes, that's great. If they give you 10 minutes, it's amazing how much that you can do in 10 minutes. If you can make it tight in 5 minutes, that's the
sale. Are you saying type or tight?
Tight. T-I-G-H-T.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And thank you for calling back. I'm glad you did.
Well, you bet. Thank you for your information.
Oh, you're more than welcome. You'll have to let us know how it turns out.
I will, and I thank you for your show. It's awesome.
I'm so glad you enjoy it.
I do. Okay, you have a great afternoon. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Jewel. Thank you for calling back. Okay.
The guy that answers the phone is so upbeat and so wonderful. I like him. He's a nice guy.
Well, Don appreciates that compliment. That is really great. We really enjoy what we do.
Good. Take care now.
Thank you, Jewel.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I told you I was going to give you the instructions on the recipe, right? You got the ingredients, the red hot flavored potato chips, the seasoned breadcrumbs, the chicken, the celery salt, the creamy blue cheese salad dressing, and a little bit of fresh parsley and maybe some celery sticks and grape tomatoes or whatever, you know, that's healthy to go along with this. It really doesn't make any difference, whatever you feel would be a nice accompaniment. Now, tip regarding the chicken. If you don't want to use a whole chicken, then do chicken wings. If you just want to use chicken thighs or chicken legs or whatever it is, remember what you're dealing with is the amount, the weight. So it's 3.5 pounds of chicken pieces, whatever works for you. But some people like white meat and some like the dark meat. Now, you preheat your oven to 400 degrees. 400 degrees, let that just warm up nicely. You're going to line a jelly roll pan with foil, and you want to place the rack in your oven on the top rack, and you want to coat the rack and the pan with cooking spray. That's easy. That'll take you 2 minutes to do. Then you take your potato chips, put them in a large bowl, and then you want to crush them. If you're smart, you'll just crush them right in the bag. Make a little bit of a hole at the top so the air goes out, and then just take a rolling pin. And just go right over the bag, crushed instantly. And you want to make sure they're crushed really fine. And then you take your potato chips and the breadcrumbs and you mix them together. Now you can sprinkle your chicken with some celery salt, and then another large bowl, you toss the chicken with the salad dressing to coat. And then you transfer your chicken one piece at a time, put it in the crumb mixture, turning to coat and pressing on the crumbs. I don't know about you, but sometimes I get lazy. I like to use a large plastic bag, and then I just put it in the bag, roll it in there, and then take it out. Then you place it on the rack in the pan. You bake it. It's going to take about 50 to 55 minutes. And if you find that your chicken is browning too quickly, then just put a piece of foil over the top of it, the same way you do with pies when you don't want the edges to get real dark. Well, that's what you do. And then, of course, you serve it when it's good and hot and sprinkle it with some parsley just for a nice bit of decoration and put it on lettuce leaves or whatever to make the platter look nice. And, oh, my goodness, we're out of time. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, I was going to give you some other tips, but that's okay. We're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a magnificent evening. Talk to you tomorrow. We'll be right here, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.